Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. There's been much confusion since the Financial Times reported that the heirs of the last Sultan of Sulu have seized two Luxembourg incorporated subsidiaries of Petronas. Now, this comes 4 months after a French arbitration court ordered Malaysia to pay $14.9 billion to those claiming to be the heirs of the Sultan, the last Sultan of Sulu. This to honour a deal that he signed in 1848 with a British trading company over the use of his territory, now known as the Malaysian Territory of Sabah. Now, how do we make sense of these latest developments? Well, to help us do this, we have joining us now Dr. Oh Ihsan. He is a senior fellow at the Sabah Singapore at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. He joins us from KK in Sabah. Ihsan, all of this has roots in the agreement, in an agreement that was signed 144 years ago. But given what has happened over the past few days, how are you reading the situation right now?
Well, I think number one, the arbitral award is very strange because I think the basis of the other side's argument would be that since 2013, Malaysia's side has stopped the payment to these so-called descendants of the Sulu Sultanate to the amount of approximately over 5,000 ringgit a year. And even if we were to resume this sort of payments and pay all these backdated payments and so on, I think it will amount to, let's say, little more than 50,000 ringgit, right? So why would this French arbitral court made an award of a few tens of billions of dollars? I think that defies legal and jurisprudential logic, first of all. But number two, I think increasingly you will see this sort of international arbitration, not only between, let's say, two sovereign states, but sometimes between a sovereign state such as Malaysia and a private party on the other hand. I think our side, or the Malaysian side, would also have to take this increasingly seriously in addition to those arbitration between sovereign states. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a very interesting point. The astronomical amount that's been claimed, almost 15 billion US dollars compared to back payoff, say 50,000, as you mentioned, 50,000 ringgit, I might add. Do you think it's just about the money, or is there a deeper claim of wanting the territory back?
Well, I think from the perspective of the so-called descendants of the Sulu Sultanate, of course, they would like to have those payments, and hopefully, there will be some sort of creeping arguments towards the so-called eventually reclaiming Sabah, or at least part of Sabah. That is also why we should take this case very seriously, because if we were to let this go and somehow the international community were to increasingly entertain such what I would consider quite illogical claims, then perhaps at some point in future, we might have a diminishing sovereignty overhaul over Sabah. Yeah.
Well, that's quite interesting because of the international dimension of this case. Can you weigh in on that? I'm curious to know why this has gone to an international level. Malaysia, I understand, did not participate in the arbitration process in France. The argument was that this was a dispute between Malaysia and the claimants. It's not a commercial contract, therefore not subject to arbitration. How are you reading the international dimension of this?
Well, first of all, I think we have to look clearly at this. Namely, it is an arbitration claim. And all these so-called courts of arbitration, they are not courts in the traditional legal definitions. They are not public courts. They are essentially, for example, the private establishments which provide this sort of arbitration and sometimes even mediation services. So sometimes I think they might be over jealous in trying to sort of take on some of these cases, even though one of the so-called alleged parties, it's a sovereign state, because I would suspect if they were to take some of these courses, then there will also, of course, be questions of fees and so on. But nowadays, I think whether we like it or not, this sort of number one, resortment to private arbitration, and number two, this sort of arbitration between a state and a private party will become increasingly acceptable to the international legal community. And that's why we would have to perhaps have a more coherent reaction to all these cases.
Well, speaking about reaction, is so politically speaking, the optics of it all. What do you think would be the better move for Malaysia in terms of resolving the case in arbitration, or stand its ground over what is seen to be a challenge to sovereignty?
Well, I think on the one hand that we will still keep on claiming our sovereign immunity as a sovereign state. Sometimes we might even have to either have our representatives in such proceedings, or at least we should have somebody, some legal professionals who is so-called, as we use the legal terms here, holding the watching brief for us. We can have a lot of methods of dealing with this. Sometimes we'll make use of the so-called good offices of a third state. Switzerland will immediately come to mind, because they are a very neutral country and so on. We could make use of the so-called good office to, in a sense, quote unquote, represent us, but not really representing us. Because if we were to be officially represented in such proceedings, that means, in a sense, we are acknowledging their claims, So sometimes we have to have this friendly intermediary to act on our behalf. But of course, again, this is very murky and unexplored waters in international jurisprudence. So I think we must have very good legal advice from both within and outside of the country.
Very quickly, Isan, I want to ask you about the Philippines' claim to the territory of Sabah. Now that Marcos Jr. is president, are we going to be seeing him re-articulating, bringing this back up, Philippines' claim to Sabah?
Well, typically before and also immediately after a Filipino presidential election, you will see these so-called claims towards the sovereignty of Sabah resurfacing in the mainstream of Philippines discussions and so on. But hopefully, I think Marcos Jr. would come to the good sense of his predecessors and eventually let the issue sort of drop to silence over the next few years of his presidential term.
Isan, thank you for speaking with us today. Dr. Oh Isan there from the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Melissa Idris. Thanks so much for staying with Consider This. Now, yesterday, the Paris Court of Appeal granted leave to suspend the arbitration award, declaring that the Malaysian government was liable to 63 billion ringgit. This is a settlement claimed by successors in interest to the last Sultan of Sulu. So what implications might this have for Malaysia moving forward? Joining us now is Isna Raisa Munira Majlis. She is the Warisan MP for Kota Belud in Sabah. Wabi Munira, thank you for being on the show today. You and several other opposition MPs have sent written requests for an emergency debate in Dewan Rakyat over the seizure of the Petronas assets. May I ask you why you want it raised in Dewan Rakyat? What kind of explanations are you looking for from the executive?
Okay, first and foremost, since I'm Sabahan, and as a Sabahan, I'm pissed. I'm angry, Melissa. first and foremost, this issue should not be politicized and should not be a political issue. It is a national issue that involves the sovereignty of the country. No one should claim mileage for this, you know, because I saw some, news here and there, sudah marak lah, I would say, this issue. Nobody interested in the first place in solving this issue until Petronas assets were seized. I quote what happened in Parliament last sidang. We have taken appropriate action to safeguard the country's sovereignty. That is the answer given. And now, see what happened? I can say that now what happened? This action by the so-called Waris Sultan Sulu by seizing Petronas asset shows their determination to get back. Petronas and other GLCs contributed almost 50 billion annually. And this is a very serious issue because before this, the federal government was so confident, saying that the arbitrary Dr. Stampa decision on, if I'm not mistaken, 28 February 2022 is not valid. So I personally feel that, you know, this decision, it is what happened now, I mean, with the Petronas and so on, it legitimized the decision, the arbitration decision. And why suddenly they become very powerful? Why after 3 months? I have questions to the government. Why after 3 months, after the Dr. Stampa decision, then only we send the nota diplomatic to 168 countries? That is why I am so disappointed when the speaker rejected my motion on the Sulu claim issue twice in the last sidang.
Why do you think there has been a delay in action? Why do you think that the federal government did not take it seriously? Do you feel that because this is an issue to do with Sabah that it didn't receive the attention and the priority that you feel it deserved?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, the issue now, government is not doing enough with the claims by so-called heirs of the Sulu Sultanate following an arbitration court in Spain for Malaysia to pay US$14.92 billion. If I can say this again, it is better you give, rather than you pay the Sulu Sultanate, it's better for you to give Sabah the money. You know, we can do so much better with the money. So I even asked the question, why did the arbitration court decision in favor with the claimants? It is so absurd. If you can ask me again, Melissa, our demand as Sabahan, we Sabahan, we want a conclusive decision, solution, once and for all. Federal government should man up, face up. I say this again, tell the Philippines to drop the name Sabah in their Republic Act 5446, 1968. We can check that. I know, once and for all. Federal government should not behave like the Philippines. You are treating Sabah as a place to gain power and support. Every presidential election, Sabah became their, you know, selling point. And it is the same thing happening in Malaysia. So the federal government must deal once and for all pertaining the claim and payment with the Sulu clan. Should take the responsibility because the security falls under the federal jurisdiction, not state government. Yeah, do not treat, I become very Sabahan when it comes to this issue.
As is your right, YB. Can I ask you?
Do not treat Sabah macam tempat kena sewa. That is what I feel, you know.
What is the risk? So you mentioned risk. What is the risk to Sabah in particular if this matter is not addressed properly, is not conclusively resolved?
You know, Melissa, I grew up listening to this story about Sulu claim since young, since I was a child. Now I become a member of parliament myself, and this issue is still going on. You know, we cannot pass this problem to the next generation. Malaysia could be disjointed because of this, disintegrated because of this issue. How can they be so powerful? Now they can seize Petronas assets. You know, what's next? That's my question. As if we were never a Malaysian region despite all these years. Oil flowed from the Sabah Sea to Kuala Lumpur with reciprocating justly the 40% in Malaysian Agreement 1963. We pay a very high price to be part of Malaysia. And now what is happening? So my concern is, what's next? I urge the government, the federal government should be, you know, firm and settle this matter once and for all. That is my demand for them.
YB, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Kota Balut MP Isna Raisa, Munira Majlis there. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more on this important issue. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with me on Consider This. Joining us now, we have Sabah lawyer Roger Chin to help shed some light on the confusion around the recent developments with the claimants of the descendants of Sultan Sulu. Joining us now is Roger Chin. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Can you begin by telling us about the historical deed that was signed almost 150 years ago? How is that it's being enforced now in an international arbitration? Is that considered a legally binding contract that is indefinite, that has lasted 150 years?
Okay, so basically what it was a treaty that was signed, like you said, about 150 years ago. That treaty was, whether you call it cession money or you call it a rent money, there was an amount that was agreed upon in order for so-called rights. Again, whether those rights ever existed is debatable. But according to the treaty, for them to let go of these rights over what is essentially most of Sabah now, you had to pay an amount of money. So Malaysia historically has been paying that amount of money. If I remember correctly, sometime in 2013, they stopped paying the rent or cessation money. And that is what this whole arbitration award is about. It's just about non-payment at money that was supposedly agreed upon in the treaty. Lawyers will say this to you, whether or not it is something that can be brought to arbitration, that's debatable, because one side will tell you that there is no arbitration clause inside. Another side will tell you, yes, but this agreement is 150 years old. As long as there are elements of arbitration instead, then it can be brought to arbitration. So that's all it is. That's what it is all about. They stopped paying in 2013. The heirs started an action based on that, had an arbitration done in Spain, which was subsequently shifted to France. To cut a long story short, an award was actually given out. So that's the most important thing. There is an award. That should be the starting point.
So now there is an award, there is an arbitration award. Does Malaysia have to recognize the arbitration award?
If there is an arbitration award, whether you like it or not, it exists. So you cannot ignore it. And Malaysia, from what I'm made to understand, did not ignore it. They actually have been trying to decide. And the latest, if not wrong, Asian award as given by a French Court of Appeal. So no, you can't ignore it. If there's an arbitration award, because Malaysia is a signatory to the New York Convention, which has over 168 countries, what it means is that at any point in time, the award can be to any of the 168 countries registered there and executed upon.
I do want to ask you, now, so if we have to uphold this award, what are the options then? I mean, are there ways for Malaysia to try and set aside the award or to dispute the arbitration award, what happens next? What do you think should Malaysia do next?
Well, essentially, I think an argument is going to be whether or not the Spain or even France ever had the jurisdiction to hear such a claim. Okay, so if you could, that would be attacking the award right at the root. So if you can attack the award right at the root, saying that there was never any jurisdiction that the either Spain or France can have, then you essentially strike it out, which is what they're trying to do. They have raised this agreement. They have raised this demands, and I believe that is why the France Court of Appeal allowed the stay. So pending final disposal of whether or not there's issues of sovereignty, whether or not you can do this when it deals with sovereign rights, and there's issues also of jurisdiction. So both of these things may give Malaysia a way out. However, of course, it's a little bit belated because the award is out. So we are playing catch up whilst we attack the root of the award.
Is there a time frame in which all of this needs to happen? Because the Court of Arbitration awarded this back in February, if I'm not mistaken, towards the end of February. So it's been more than 3 months. Was there a delay in acting on this until we saw the seizures of the Petronas assets?
Very good question. I would think because they got a stay, they acted within time. Obviously, yes, there is a time frame to do it. If I'm not wrong, it was 2 months. But just because it's heard a few days ago doesn't mean it wasn't filed several months ago. So I would think the Malaysian government, upon the award being granted, then the Malaysian government probably did something to try to set it aside, appeal to it, and this is where we're at. Of course, the timing is not brilliant because it was granted on the day after the seizures were done in Luxembourg.
Well, you mentioned 168 countries that there are, you know, any assets in Malaysia in 168 countries. Is there a risk of more seizures? I know that there's a stay that has been granted, but, you know, going forward, is there a risk of more asset seizures?
Certainly there is a risk, but for the time being, no, because as long as the stay is there, nothing much can happen, because essentially a stay means that you cannot do anything with the award that you're given, and the stay was obtained in France. So that is essentially going back to the root and attacking it at the root. So the stay would hold for the time being, and so as long as the stay is there, you won't find any execution proceedings going on for the time being.
Roger, do you believe it was a mistake for Malaysia not to have participated in the arbitration process?
I believe they certainly should have challenged it vigorously right from the start.
Okay. All right. Well, now, as you said that, you know, it's about playing catch up. So what do you think might happen? What would you like to see happen next? Again, you know, this seems to have seems to be a very fast moving, developing case where it's suddenly back in the headlines. What would you like to see in that will give you, I guess, signs that this is headed towards a resolution?
I think what we really need to do is a final resolution. Okay, this award is really not final in the sense that it's about payment of the monies that were not paid. What I believe Malaysia should do is attack it from a historical perspective. Whether or not the Sultan ever had the rights to sign away in that treaty 150 years ago. If the Sultan never had the right to sign away all those rights 150 years ago, then it would be arguable that that whole treaty is null and void, and therefore you don't need to pay it. That would be the ultimate solution, and I believe that is where we should go, and this would involve getting historical documents, which Malaysia is doing. There is, I think, about a few weeks ago, it was announced that a central repository of documents, including the Sulu documents, will be established, where finally we can collect historical documents, which we can use for legal arguments, and hopefully, once and for all, knock out this treaty out of the ballpark.
Thank you so much, Roger. That was Sabah lawyer Roger Chin wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off this evening. Thank you for watching, and good night.